Garfield's funeral. Garfield's funeral train left Long Branch on the same special track that it brought him there, traveling over tracks blanketed with flowers and past houses adorned with flags.
There's probably a Billy Joel song about that specific set of train tracks.
And Garfield's body rolled the tracks. That's more of a Springsteen song.
That Billy, you know, Billy Joel wrote on a notepad on his steering wheel as he was just like slamming into barricades on the highway.
I think this would be perfect if it was a bossa nova.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Hello.
And Ryan.
This is, I'm gonna crack this one open to Steve never living that down. I'm doing this show for, oh my god, 5 years now?
It's a diet Mr. Pibb.
No, I will note, we do everything in one take, so it wasn't like we did 20 takes, and that was the best one. That was the first take.
First and only. I have, walking down the store in Publix, I saw Coca-Cola Holiday Creamy Vanilla. And I was like, how is that any different from regular Vanilla Coke? Apparently it's Holiday Creamy Vanilla Coke. I don't know, man. It tastes like Vanilla Coke.
Yeah. It's all in it where they source like the vanilla. It's about like whether a rabbi approves the vanilla. That's whether it's creamy or not. Oh, man. Christ, dude. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. That's what it is. Creamy is another word for kosher. Anyway,
what did you do to the vanilla? The vanilla doesn't taste like it used to.
Speaking of some kosher creamies... I heard the president's been getting some from a former president. Right out the hose.
Bro. From the tap.
It's definitely not real. Like, there's no way. But the other thing is apparently they found out that, what's her name? Guilford? I can't fucking remember her name. Gwildor? Maxwell?
Ghislaine.
Gwildor Maxwell over there. Apparently, the only other reference to Bubba is she owned a horse named Bubba. So the alternative is much worse.
So which one? Yeah, I'm about to say which one's worse. Listen, on a serious note, the only thing that actually for a split second gave me pause is the actual vocabulary and grammar that was used in that email.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the actual
really got sentence, my britches in a twist.
Well, the actual sentence was, do you have the photos? Or right. The photo.
Right.
Not, do you have a photo? Or do you have any photos? It's, do you have...
Yeah, it's a definite article.
The photo. Like, there is something that exists. And I'm just like, I mean... Of course, and the piss tape's real, and Trump pissed in the Obama, of course, but that's the only thing, in the last, 10 years that we've been talking about this dumb shit, that has ever given me pause, is when that email, which also is contained, they went and looked back, this is in the Homeland Security documents and stuff like this, this is officially part of record, that definitive article kind of was like, wait, what, why would you say the photos, or the photo?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's all bullshit, and I couldn't care less. We're all going to die in nuclear hellfire. We got probably about maybe 20 good years left, so enjoy them.
20 days, 20 minutes. Who cares?
YOLO. Well, more than 20 minutes. I want to finish this shit.
Speaking of a creamy nuclear Coca-Cola, who are we talking about this week?
Well, we're continuing to talk about when James A. Garfield.
We got to finish up with Mr. Garfield.
This guy's got a prolific existence.
Yeah, he was around for everything. He was kind of like Forrest Gump.
Yep. Right in the butt.
But last episode, we saw that Garfield became president. He gave his state of he gave his acceptance speech. And then it goes into sort of the politics of his time as president.
Now, he wasn't president long, right?
No, he was not. We'll get into that.
Okay.
Garfield, through a lot of his presidency, would be in sort of like a battle with Conkling, a factional opponent of his, who demanded compensatory appointment for his faction, such as the position of Secretary of the Treasury. This squabble would sort of take up a lot of Garfield's brief presidency, and the feud with Conkling reached a climax when the president, at Blaine's instigation, nominated Conkling's enemy, Judge William H. Robertson, to be collector of the Port of New York.
I feel like we don't use the word squabble enough, and that, you know, back in the day, we used to actually, like, it was like one of those things where, like, if a guy could fight, I had heard black people in my high school say he had mad squabbles, and I fucking love that shit. That's a great way to describe it. So scrappy. I occasionally will, occasionally say that, yo, he got squabbles. Sounds like he's got a rare disorder.
We need to start bringing old-timey words back. They're so much better than the current vernacular.
Some fucking disorder called squabbles. What the fuck would that be? I feel like it would be like you constantly, like when you try to walk straight, but you only walk like a running back, like they juke, you know?
So you're just kind of got squabbles.
Yo, he's got squabbles. He's on constant juke mode. He's hit sticking.
Hey, guess what? Skibido? Squabbles. Skibido has definitely got the squabbles. Not anymore. I mean, that ankle was tragic, but yeah, bro.
Yeah, Scatterdo. Skadoots.
This was one of the prize patronage positions below cabinet level and was then held by Edwin A. Merritt. Conkling raised the time-honored principle of senatorial courtesy in an attempt to defeat the nomination to no avail. Garfield, who believed the practice was corrupt, would not back down and threatened to withdraw all nominations unless Robertson was confirmed, intending to, quote-unquote, settle the question whether the president is registering clerk of the Senate or the executive of the United States. Ultimately, Conkling and his New York colleague, Senator Thomas C. Platt, resigned their Senate seats to seek vindication, but found only further humiliation when the New York legislature elected others in their places. Robertson was confirmed as collector, and Garfield's victory was clear. To Blaine's chagrin, the victorious Garfield returned to his goal of balancing the interests of party factions and nominated some of Conkling's stalwart friends to offices.
So just nepotism.
Sort of like the way government has worked up to this point, which Garfield is pushing back against, is that when you come into office, you essentially give, like, you essentially do what Trump did. Like, you give all your friends, like, positions. Like, normally, it's like if you donate a lot to a candidate, you'll get a position, like, you will be the, you'll be, like, the ambassador to a country or something like that. Like, something that's not really that important, but it's just, like, a government position. But back in these days, it would be like, you gave enough money, you got to be, like, a cabinet-level position.
Oh, so basically what, like you said, what goes on today. if you suck up enough, because that joke doesn't work anymore. Like, fucking
if you suck enough.
Administration is ruined comedy. But, like, apparently if you kiss the ring hard enough, you get whatever the fuck you want.
With his cabinet complete, Garfield had to contend with a myriad of office seekers. He exclaimed, "My God, what is there in this place that a man should ever get into?" Garfield's family happily settled into the White House, but he found presidential duties exasperating. Garfield ordered Treasury Secretary William Windom to refinance the national debt by calling in outstanding U.S. bonds paying 6% interest. Holders would have the option of accepting cash or new bonds at 3%, closer to the interest rates of the time. Taxpayers were saved an estimated $10 million. By comparison, the federal expenditures in 1881 were below $261 million, the equivalent of 7.28 billion today.
So not even fucking close to what we are, what we normally spend, right? Because we spend close to a trillion, don't we?
Yeah, it's over a trillion.
Like, we spend an amount of money that is just theoretical at this point. Like, it's just fucking numbers on a spreadsheet. Like, it doesn't mean anything at this point, right? Or am I just really oversimplifying, like, the amount of debt that we owe?
In 1880, President Hayes had nominated Stanley Matthews to the Supreme Court, but the President Senate declined to act on his nomination. In March of 1881, Garfield renominated Matthews to the court, and the Senate confirmed Matthews by a vote of 24 to 23.
Garfield said, if you don't nominate this motherfucker that I told you to nominate last time, I'm down there. I'm gonna whoop everybody, you motherfucking asses.
Gonna hang you by your ankles.
I feel like James A. Garfield's like a really mad dad. He's like, all right, I'm gonna send him down there again. And this time, you do the correct fucking thing. You assholes hear me? And if he comes back,
get off the shed bit.
He tells me one more time that you wouldn't confirm him, we got problems. I'm gonna come down there my goddamn self. You understand?
All right, you need to appoint my candidate. You put on a show for everybody? Is that what you're doing? I said, you know, you gotta appoint my candidate. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, God. Yeah, first time I was asking you, now I'm telling you. Put him in office.
Discord's doing that thing where it turns your voice into squabbles.
I love it.
So I might need the recordings, because otherwise your story doesn't make sense. Like, the whole first part of the story was there, and then when you hit the punchline, it was just like, I remember saying, it's like, what?
A doobity.
Yeah.
According to the New York Times, quote-unquote, opposition to Matthews' Supreme Court appointment stemmed from his prosecution in 1859 of a newspaper editor who had assisted two runaway slaves. Because Matthews was a, quote-unquote, a professed abolitionist at the time, the matter was later framed as political expediency triumphing over moral principle.
What? Mm-hmm. Okay, whatever. Whatever.
Matthews served on the court until he died in 1889. Grant and Hayes had both advocated civil service reform, and by 1881, such reform associations had organized with renewed energy across the nation. Garfield sympathized with them, believing the spoils system was had damaged the presidency, and only it was often eclipsed more important concerns. Some reformers became disappointed when Garfield promoted limited tenure only to minor office seekers and gave appointments to his old friends. Corruption in the post office also cried out for reform. In April of 1880, there had been a congressional investigation of corruption in the post office department, where profiteering rings allegedly stole millions of dollars, securing bogus mail contracts on star routes. After obtaining contracts with the lowest bid, costs to run the mail routes would be escalated and profits would be divided among ring members. Shortly after taking office, Garfield received word of postal corruption by an alleged star route ring leader, Assistant Postmaster General Thomas J. Brady.
So, real quick, what is a star
route? Sorry, wait, Tom Brady?
Not like...
Yeah, Tom Brady.
This guy's going on about some fucking bus company, and I'm over here talking about Tom Brady. Star routes. Right,
can we please go over
about
the star route? Is this? Did you drive around Mario Kart? Like, what is this? Like Rainbow
God
Road?
Goddamn right. Yeah, no, Rainbow Road, that's over there in California. That's the land of fruits and nuts.
Star routes were, it was sort of this name that was given to a very lucrative, like, bribe, like, areas on, like, the postal registry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
These were areas that were not officially serviced by the post office because they could not be accessed easily from a train depot or port. Instead, they were serviced by private contractors who delivered the mail. So there was a lot of avenues for kickbacks from these routes.
Ah, like, what do they call them today? Like, last leg delivery or...
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Last mile.
I mean, that might be what it's called. Last mile delivery or whatever. Yeah, there's companies are specializing in, like, getting it from, like, the post office or whatever.
Yeah, that's why I don't have to pay tariffs about Chinese goods. Because they do last leg shit.
Yeah.
I literally have not paid any tariffs from AliExpress. They don't... They, like... figured out some trick. I forget. My wife explained it to me. It's fucking crazy.
They probably use DHL.
They DHL like ship it all. No, they ship it all in one package or something. So they only pay once, and they just don't even forward the cost of that. It's something weird.
I mean, it would be great. Is it the same thing as like Alibaba?
I don't know. I'll have to look
into
it.
Like where it's like cheap, where it's like cheap Chinese shitty goods instead of like good Chinese stuff.
AliExpress?
They all throw it in a shipping container and then it just comes here.
I mean, AliExpress
just like
is...
a guy with a cigarette half hanging out of his mouth just chucking boxes into a container until it's full.
AliExpress has both. It's got a lot of legit shit on there, and then it's got knockoffs, and then it's got the cheap shit.
Oh, okay.
After obtaining contracts with the lowest bid, costs to run the mail routes would be escalated and profits would be divided among ring members. Shortly after taking office, Garfield received word of postal corruption by an alleged Star Route ringleader, Assistant Postmaster Thomas J. Brady, like I said. Garfield demanded Brady's resignation and ordered prosecutions that ended in trials for conspiracy. When told that his party, including his campaign manager, Stephen W. Dorsey, was involved, Garfield directed that the corruption in the post office be rooted out to the bone, regardless where it might lead. Brady resigned and was indicted for conspiracy, though jury trials in 1882 and 1883 found Brady not guilty.
I had to look it up just because I knew that the coincidences would be way too fucking much, but the Tom Brady, the GOAT, the greatest man to ever pick up the pigskin, his middle name is Edward. So, yeah, it's not Jay, like the other Thomas Brady.
I mean,
Tom, I would be the very names, thrown.
The names were different, but they both, like, open mouth kiss, you know, their family members. So.
Now keep those open. All right, here I'm coming in. Get away from me.
Garfield believed the key to improving the state of African American civil rights was government-supported education. During Reconstruction, freedmen had gained citizenship and suffrage, which enabled them to participate in government. But Garfield believed their rights were being eroded by Southern white resistance and illiteracy, and he was concerned that blacks would become America's permanent peasantry.
Well,
he proposed...
He wasn't wrong, man. They're trying to make it like that.
He proposed a quote-unquote universal education system funded by the federal government. In February of 1866, a congressman from Ohio, Garfield, and Ohio State Commissioner, or Ohio School Commissioner Emerson Edward White, had drafted a bill for the National Department of Education. They believed that through the use of statistics, they could push the U.S. Congress to establish a federal agency for school reform. But by the time of Garfield's presidency, Congress and the northern white public had lost interest in African-American rights, and Congress did not pass federal funding for universal education during this term, or during his term.
Womp womp. Womp womp.
Garfield also worked to appoint several African-Americans to prominent positions. Frederick Douglass, Recorder of Deeds in Washington, Robert Elliott, Special Agent to the Treasury, John M. Langston, Haitian Minister.
The Frederick Douglass?
Douglass. Blanche K. Bruce, Registered to the Treasury. Garfield believed Southern support for the Republican Party could be gained by quote-unquote commercial and industrial interests rather than race issues, and began to reverse Hayes's policy of conciliating Southern Democrats. He appointed William H. Hunt, a Republican from Louisiana, as Secretary of the Navy. To break the hold of the resurgent Democratic Party in the Solid South, Garfield took patronage advice from Virginia Senator William Mahone of the Biracial Independent Readjuster Party, hoping to add the independent strength to the Republicans there. Garfield had little foreign policy experience, so he leaned heavily on Blaine. They agreed on the need to promote freer trade, especially within the Western Hemisphere. Garfield and Blaine believed increasing trade with Latin America would be the best way to keep the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland from dominating the region. By encouraging exports, they believed they could increase American prosperity. Garfield authorized Blaine to call for a Pan-American conference in 1882 to mediate disputes among Latin American nations and to serve as a forum for talks on increasing trade. At the same time, they hoped to negotiate a peace in the War of the Pacific, then being fought by Bolivia, Chile, and Peru. Blaine favored a resolution that resulted in Peru yielding no territory, but Chile, by 1881, had occupied the Peruvian capital of Lima and rejected any settlement that restored the previous status quo. Garfield sought to expand American influence in other areas, calling for a renegotiation of the Clayton-Bulwer Treaty to allow the United States to construct a canal through Panama without British involvement and attempting to reduce British influence in the strategically located Kingdom of Hawaii.
How the fuck did the British have influence in Hawaii?
Because Captain Cook got there first and then got, like, killed.
Oh, okay. I guess that makes sense then. Okay.
Garfield and Blaine's plans for the United States involvement in the world stretched even beyond the Western Hemisphere as he sought commercial treaties with Korea and Madagascar. Garfield also considered enhancing U.S. military strength abroad, asking Navy Secretary Hunt to investigate the Navy's condition with an eye toward expansion and modernization. In the end, these ambitious plans came to nothing after Garfield was assassinated.
Assassinated?
What for? Like, why? Did he steal someone's president?
Because he was the president, man. People want to kill the president. Like, that's what it
is. He's also, like, the anti-Trump, which is what comes down to it, is why he was assassinated. But in the end, these ambitious plans came to nothing after Garfield was assassinated. Yeah, we get to Guiteau. Like, if Guiteau was alive today and he had been in, like, Trump's orbit, like, he'd be, like, the head of, like, the U.S. intelligence agency or something like that. He'd be given some, like, major U.S., like job that he is in no way qualified for.
Oh my god, I keep wanting to say Dan Bongino, but then I'm also like, wait a minute, like, no, he like actually was like a fucking Secret Service agent. Like, what the fuck is going on in this world?
I mean, you know, Kash Patel is very qualified as someone who was investigated by the FBI to head the FBI.
So he knows,
yeah, Dan Bongino, he passed that background check with
no he didn't.
It's I'm good, not man. Fucking. It's, I would never fine. Hire a man like Bongino. The fucking guy looks like he looks like someone who's mid shit 24/7. Like, like they're, like, you know what I mean? Like, look at his face. He looks like you're just doing that Valsalva maneuver. That's what he looks like also, 24 hours a day. And fucking when he's sitting next to Patel, it looks like Patel's smelling it. Like, that's really what it is. Bongino's constantly shitting, and Patel's scenting it with one side of his face.
I can't sit there and honestly take seriously a guy whose head is a perfect square. Like,
I know. No, it does, like, fucking, what is this? Sliced meat? Like, what
you
is
look
this?
Like, you look like one of the blockheads like from Gumby. Like, I need you to...
Dude, he looks like someone who's holding up, a heavy dumbbell, you know? Oh, I gotta move this down.
Oh, fuck.
9 countries had accepted invitations to the Pan-American Conference, but the invitations were withdrawn in April of 1882 after Blaine resigned from the cabinet and Arthur, Garfield's successor, canceled the conference. Naval reform continued under Arthur on a more modest scale than Garfield and Hunt had envisioned, ultimately ending in the construction of the Squadron of Evolution.
They had squabbles in that squadron.
So Charles J. Charles J. Gateau had followed various professions in his life, but in 1880 had determined to gain federal office by supporting what he expected would be the winning Republican ticket.
Okay, wait. Who is this guy? Charles Gateau? What? Gateau?
Yeah, Charles Gateau.
Yeah.
Charles Gateau. Who is this guy that we just kind of like introduced into the story in Act 3? What is this?
He is a perennial loser.
A perennial loser.
Oh my god.
He was dead
for fucking 200 years catching strays.
Look, he woke up every morning, all right? He won one thing.
He was kicked out of Oneida, which was a free love community. Like he was the first single guy. Oh, at the God. Sex club.
He's like the first incel? Jesus Christ. Okay. All right. So, I guess my question more accurately is, why are we just
squabbles?
Dropping this guy into the story right now?
Did he have squabbles?
Well, because he's going to be the assassin of Garfield.
Oh, okay. Now I'm here. All right, I'm here.
But Gateau had followed various professions in his life, but in 1880... had determined to gain federal office by supporting what he expected would be the winning Republican ticket. He composed a speech titled Garfield vs. Hancock and got it printed by the Republican National Committee. One means of persuading the voters in that era was through orators expounding on the candidate's merits, but with the Republicans seeking more famous men, Gateau received few opportunities to speak. On one occasion, according to Kenneth D. Ackerman, Gateau was unable to finish his speech due to nerves.
Gateau, a little beta blocker, he would have been fine. Give him a little metoprolol, a little beta blocker. Stop the shakes, but fine. I have it on good word that there are surgeons who operate on people after taking a beta blocker so they don't shake. Oh, don't you love medicine?
Yeah.
Gateau, who considered himself a stalwart, deemed his contribution to Garfield's victory sufficient to justify his appointment to the position of consul in Paris, even though he spoke no French nor any foreign language.
Absolute dumbass.
One medical expert has since described Gateau as possibly a narcissistic schizophrenic. A neuroscientist, Kent Keel, assessed him as a clinical psychopath. One of Garfield's more wearying duties was seeing office seekers, and he saw Gateau at least once.
Yeah, can you White House to sit in the big chair and seeing Gateau walk in your fucking door not only once but twice, bro?
This is also the era where we like shit on like you know older people saying you know like I went in there and I said hello to the manager and like gave him a firm handshake, handed my resume, and that's when I got the job. That paid enough for me to like buy a house and a car. But during this era, you could literally do that with the president. Like they sort of stop it a bit after Garfield, but you would like, if you've seen the movie Lincoln, where like Lincoln is just like talking to people who come up and like there's the one guy where he's like, he wants to be like the toll operator for the one route or whatever.
Yeah,
like that's the type of stuff the president would deal with. Like people would literally line up and go just to talk to the president during the day,
air their grievances like a king almost.
Doug, I can't even fucking imagine the headache of that. Like, yeah. Oh god, just sitting behind the desk, just rubbing your temples. You see
which Garfield
douchebag come? You see this douchebag come walking in for the second time in the same day. You're just like, oh my fucking god, bro! What the fuck? Yes, sir, Mr. Gateau, how can I help you? God, it's got to be obnoxious.
I think the Supreme Court should be only members who have squabbles,
or they can squabble.
They got no squabble.
A White House official suggested to Gateau that he approach Blaine, as the consulship was within the Department of State. Blaine also saw the public regularly, and Gateau became a regular at these sessions. Blaine, who had no intention of giving Gateau a position he was unqualified for and had not earned, simply said the deadlock in the Senate over Robertson's nomination made it impossible to consider the Paris consulship, which required Senate confirmation. Once the New York senators have resigned and Robertson had been confirmed as collector, Gutto pressed his claim, and Blaine told him he would not receive the position. Gutto came to believe he had lost the position because he was a stalwart. He decided the only way to end the Republican Party's internecine warfare was for Garfield to die, though he had nothing to though he had nothing personal against the president.
Oh my God! Yeah, he's definitely a schizophrenic. Well, that guy's got to die. I don't mind you. I think you're a good guy, right? Shook your hand a couple times, asked for the position in Paris. You told me no. Fuck you. But hey, you know, you're not a bad guy. He believed that
when Chester A. Arthur succeeded Garfield as president, that he would restore peace, and he felt that it would lead to rewards to fellow stalwarts such as Gutto.
God damn it.
And spoiler alert, it did not.
The assassination of Abraham Lincoln was deemed a fluke due to the Civil War, and Garfield, like most people, saw no reason the president should be guarded. His movements and plans were often printed in the newspapers.
But as we know from a couple weeks ago, apparently Ryan can't read the fucking newspapers except until Steve jumps down his fucking throat for getting my news and be like the Internet Explorer of, like, you know,
Internet time. Explorer.
It's just I'm a day
like
that.
More like Netscape Navigator.
from the AOL loading screen.
The Lynx Linux browser, the text browser. This guy got his fucking
up
website
my old,
from old Gopher URLs.
I cannot fucking stand either one of you.
This guy loads up. Logged into Prodigy. He pays extra for an actual bot's phone line coming into his house.
I was on the phone for 4 hours because I asked him, what do you mean I'm not getting my internet from Earthlink?
Yep.
Jesus Christ.
It's the kind of guy when he's trying to figure out what to watch on TV, he goes down the fucking library and loads up TV Guide on the microfiche. you got the big copy for me, Shirley?
Fuck. I remember my great-grandmother used to get TV Guide delivered to the house. She used to have a little stack of TV Guides, bro. Jesus
Christ. TV Guide was the best. It was the best in the bathroom. It's something to think about when you're done shitting.
Now, Ryan, you be careful with that cover. It has Eddie on there, and I love that Eddie from Frasier.
Why is all the pages stuck together about this expose with Lonnie Anderson?
But Gutto knew that Garfield would leave Washington for a cooler climate on July 2nd, 1881, made plans to kill him before then.
Literally anywhere a gun. Is cooler than Washington.
He purchased a gun he thought would look good in a museum and followed Garfield several times, but each time his plans were frustrated or he lost his nerve.
A gun that would look his good opportunity. In a museum? Like, he considered the aesthetic?
Yeah, he considered the aesthetics of the gun he would use to kill the president. Like, this gun's going to look really cool at a museum exhibit.
Well, if I'm going to do this, I might as well be stylish about it.
Good God. All right.
His opportunities dwindled to one, Garfield's departure by train for New Jersey on the morning of July 2nd. Gutto concealed himself by the ladies' waiting room at the 6th Street Station of the Baltimore and Potomac Railroad, from where Garfield was scheduled to depart.
Oh, he got clapped in New Jersey?
No, he was clapped in Maryland, I think.
Oh, okay.
Close enough.
Though
close
he does, there, pal. He does die, I believe, in New Jersey at the end.
Oh, so New Jersey killed him.
Yeah.
New Jersey actually killed him, huh? Okay. All right. Keep that in mind.
He said, the only thing I can live for is pumping my own gas, and they denied him that.
No, sir, this is full service, not self-service. Get the fuck back in your car.
Look, you can pump a lot
and
of things here.
And a South Asian man.
You can pump up the jam.
A South Asian man.
You can pump it up the ass, but you cannot pump your gas, okay?
A South Asian man was polite and firm with him, and that caused him to go into cardiac arrest, and he died soon afterwards.
Jesus Christ.
Most of Garfield's cabinet plan to accompany him at least part of the way. Blaine, who was to remain in Washington, came to the station to see him off. The two men were deep in conversation, did not notice Gateau before he took out his revolver and shot Garfield twice, once in the back and once in the arm. Gateau attempted to leave the station, but was quickly captured. As Blaine recognized him, Gateau was led away and said, "I did it. I will go to jail for it. I am a stalwart, and Arthur will be president."
Good God. Fucking delusional.
News of his motivation to benefit the stalwarts reached many with the news of the shooting, causing rage against the faction. Garfield was struck by the two shots. One glanced off his arm while the other pierced his back, shattering a rib and embedding itself in his abdomen. "My God, what is this?" he exclaimed after he was shot. Among those at the station was Robert Todd Lincoln, who was deeply upset, thinking back to his father, Abraham Lincoln, was assassinated 60 years earlier. And this, like, it just keeps happening.
Oh my fucking God, how traumatic is that?
Robert Todd Lincoln just rocking back and forth, like, they just keep dying everywhere I go. I can't be real presidents.
I like
first how, my father, like how, now Garfield.
I like how James Garfield's like, "My God, what is this?" Not like, ow, not like, "What the fuck?" No, it's, "My God, what is this?
What's this then?"
What's all this then?
Is this it? Is this your boy? Is this it? Garfield was taken on a mattress upstairs to a private office where several doctors examined him. At his request, Garfield was taken back to the White House and his wife, then in New Jersey, was sent for. Blaine sent word to Vice President Arthur in New York City, who received threats against his life because of his animosity toward Garfield and Gateau's statements.
Do you know how hard it is to move a mattress upstairs? And now you're telling me they threw this guy on the mattress and took him upstairs? Absolutely crazy work.
Correct.
Although Joseph Lister's pioneering work in antisepsis was known to American doctors, few of them had confidence in it, and none of his advocates were among Garfield's treating physicians.
Should have had some Listerine.
The physician who took charge at the depot and then at the White House was Dr. Willard Bliss. A noted physician and surgeon, Bliss was an old friend of Garfield, and about a dozen doctors led by Bliss were soon probing the wound with unsterilized fingers and instruments.
Love that.
Garfield was given morphine for the pain and asked Bliss to frankly tell him his chances, which Bliss put it at 1 in 100. "Well, doctor, we'll take the chance." Over the next few days, Garfield made some improvement as the nation viewed the news from the Capitol and prayed. Although he never stood again, he was able to sit up and write several times, and his recovery was viewed so positively that a steamer was fitted out as a seagoing hospital to aid with his convalescence. He was nourished on oatmeal porridge, which he hated, and milk from a cow on the White House lawn. When told that the Indian chief Sitting Bull, a prisoner of the army, was starving, Garfield said, "Let him starve initially," but a few moments later said, "No, send him by oatmeal."
That's a huge fuck you, because he just said he hated it.
Yeah.
Nah, send him this shit. This shit fucking sucks. Give him that.
X-ray imaging, which would have assisted physicians in precisely locating the bullet in Garfield's body, would not be invented for another 14 years. Alexander Graham Bell tried to locate the bullet with a primitive metal detector, but was unsuccessful, though the device had been effective when testing on others. But Bliss limited its use on Garfield, ensuring he remained in charge. Because Bliss insisted the bullet rested somewhere it did not, the detector could not locate it. Bell shortly returned after adjusting the device, which emitted an unusual tone in the area where Bliss believed the bullet was lodged. Bliss took this as a confirmation that the bullet was where he declared it to be. Bliss recorded the test as a success, saying it was, quote-unquote, now unanimously agreed with the location of the ball has been ascertained with reasonable certainty, and that it lies, as heretofore stated, in the front wall of the abdomen, immediately over the groin, about 5 inches below and to the right of the navel.
Did Alexander Graham Bell really just... I need you to explain it to me one time. Did he change... Like, did he fuck with his little device to make it seem like Bliss was correct?
No, I think what happened was, and I've heard this brought up before, is that the bed frame that Garfield was in was brass, and that it could have been giving, like, some weird effect with the metal detector, because it's literally a metal detector that they're using. It's not any type of thing you would use in a modern medical thing. It's like what you use to, like, comb the beach to look for coins. Right. And so because this thing was, like, making a noise that was different than normal, Bliss was just like, oh, that's it. That's the bullet. I'm 100% right. Now get the fuck out.
Okay.
One means of keeping Garfield comfortable in Washington summer heat was one of the first successful air conditioning units. Air propelled by fans over ice and then dried, reduced the temperature in the sick room to around 20 degrees Fahrenheit. Engineers from the Navy and other scientists worked together to develop the unit, though there were problems to solve.
They brought the temperature down to 20 degrees?
Yeah.
20 degrees. Steven, mm-hmm. They brought this room to 20 degrees Fahrenheit?
Yeah, they essentially made it a freezer.
What? How the?
You gotta keep the burgers cold, you know? Or they go bad. They get lousy.
So, okay. Alright. Alright. Okay, maybe this guy really loved the fucking cold, I guess. Alright.
He's
okay.
One of those fucking people that you can never get the thermostat right for. They're what? Like, I'm hot. I'm cold. It's like the guy, there was a tweet last week I read where it was like, I don't know why, dog, but 72 degrees with the AC on is a much different temperature than 72 degrees with the heater on.
100 a fundo.
This initially helped, and the bedridden Garfield held a brief cabinet meeting on July 29th. Members were under orders from Bliss to discuss nothing that might excite him. Doctors probed the abscess, hoping to find the bullet. They likely made the infections worse. Garfield, so they're all, like, sticking their fingers in his, like, bullet wound.
He just got done taking a fucking shit in the privy.
Insanity.
Garfield performed only one official act in August, signing an extradition paper. By the end of the month, he was much feebler than he had been, and his weight had decreased from 210 pounds to 130 pounds.
Oh, he's out of there. Oh, he's finished.
Garfield had long been anxious to escape hot, unhealthy Washington. In early September, the doctors agreed to move him to Elberon, part of Long Branch, New Jersey, where his wife had recovered earlier in the summer.
Can't fucking stay in Long Branch.
He left the White House for the last time on September 5th, traveling in a specially cushioned railway car, a spur line to the Franklin Cottage, a seaside mansion given over to his use, was built in a night by volunteers. Yeah.
What the fuck? Did this thing come out of a Sears catalog and come in pieces? Like, oh, it's a funny story. That's why I found out Chick-fil-A puts up their businesses so fast. The stores. They come in pieces. They're like, there's a word for it.
I've seen it.
Yeah,
prefabricated.
Yeah, like prefab buildings that they're just come out and just put together. Like Lego sets. Like gigantic Legos.
It makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, when you're putting them up that fast,
They're building a Chick-fil-A, not the Parthenon.
Yeah.
Maybe you're building the Parthenon Chick-fil-A, you know, kind of like the fucking Bass Pro Shops pyramid. I mean,
The Athens, Georgia Chick-fil-A.
Modular. That's the word I'm thinking of. They're modular.
Oh, modularity. Modular homes.
Hey, listen, your people killed President Garfield. You just pipe down over there.
Your people.
Please don't go through history and find out the people that my people have killed.
Those are people who died.
Look at Ryan's 23 and me, and it's like your great-great uncle is like Charles Guiteau.
Good Lord.
After arriving in Elberon the next day, Garfield was moved from the train car to a bedroom where he could see the ocean as officials and reporters maintained what became after he initially showed some signs of getting better, a death watch. Garfield's personal secretary, Joe Stanley Brown, wrote 40 years later, "To this day, I cannot hear the sound of the low, slow roll of the Atlantic on the shore, the sound which filled my ears as I walked from my cottage to his bedside without recalling again that ghastly tragedy."
Profoundly
On September 18th, Garfield asked Colonel A.F. Rockwell, a friend, if he would have a place in history. Rockwell assured him he would and told Garfield that he had much work still before him, but his response was, "No, my work is done." The following day, Garfield, then suffering also from pneumonia and hypertension, marveled that he could not pick up a glass despite feeling well and went to sleep without discomfort.
My man is like stroking the fuck out with pneumonia, got shot. He's probably septic.
Oh, yeah. He is 100% like septic because, yeah, like guys who've never washed their hands in their life, other than maybe like dipping their hands in water, like putting their fingers into his like bullet wounds, trying to like dig out the bullet.
It's, oh God, it's fucking insane that he lived this long after getting shot.
They also say that about Lincoln, that Lincoln might have possibly lived considering the low caliber of the bullet he was shot with. But like the physicians are like, "Yeah, let's try to dig that bad boy out," and they're just sticking their fingers in there.
Yeah, it's like these dudes didn't believe in microbes and stuff like that. They're like, "Germs, what the fuck are those, you nerd? Get the fuck out of here."
just got done eating Popeyes, their hands are covered in like
literally
ketchup and barbecue sauce.
Yeah, licking the barbecue sauce, they're just like fingers. They're sitting there, all right, let me open this up real quick. Motherfucker, wash your goddamn hands.
God, I love these voodoo fries, and then just goes in
there. Voodoo fries my ass. Come on, you guys never heard the voodoo deck joke?
Yes.
Though probably the worst joke of our childhood. Like the most prolific. Listen, and probably the worst. Either that or any of those like Little Johnny jokes or like the Chinese Chinese songs. Those are the worst.
Oh my God, dude. Ugh. I used to know so many Little Johnny jokes. It was unreal. I'm so glad I memory hold those.
Yeah.
As a side note, speaking of dirty hands and infections, if you have to go to the ER and we have to get urine from you, I don't care if you're on drugs, so it's probably not why I need your urine. But more importantly, after you urinate, when you pee into the cup for us and then you just walk right out the fucking bathroom without washing your hands, everybody around there knows that, just so you know. That's really gross. Wash your fucking hands, please, people. Thank you.
That's a similar story I heard about Hulk Hogan.
He didn't wash his hands.
Yeah, that I knew some friends that used to work at Full Sail back when they had the partnership with WWE. So their building was the same building that the NXT people were in, and apparently Hulk Hogan came in one day, and some of the guys were in the bathroom while he was there, and he did not wash his hands when he left the bathroom.
That's disgusting.
I mean, not that you have to worry about it anymore, but
monsters in heaven.
it's probably what killed him.
Garfield awoke that evening around 10:15 p.m., complaining of great pain in his chest to his chief of staff, General David Swaim, who was watching him. as he placed his hand over his heart. The president then requested a drink of water from Swaim. After finishing his glass, Garfield said, "Oh, Swaim, this terrible pain, press your hand on it." As Swaim put his hand on Garfield's chest, Garfield's hands went up reflexively. Clutching his heart, he exclaimed, "Oh, Swaim, can't you stop this? Oh, no, oh, Swaim." Those were Garfield's last words. Swaim ordered another attendant to send for Bliss, who found Garfield unconscious.
His fucking last despite words efforts, were, "Oh, Swaim."
Yeah.
No. So you're going to tell me that nobody started CPR? Nobody called 911? Nobody
went to get a defibrillator? Last words or some fucking ridiculous shit. Like, I can't believe that Michael Jordan thought Kwame Brown was going to be, like, a good player on the Washington Wizards. What was he talking about? Michael Jordan?
Wasn't why did Sway make a primitive battery and then try to resuscitate him?
When did he play for the Washington? I thought he played on
wasn't
the
Steve Jobs? Wasn't Steve Jobs' final words like, oh, wow, and then beep?
I'm pretty sure most people's last words are something, like, incomprehensible because, you know, when most people die, they're not in, like, the best states. They can't just be like, "Remember me.
Brain's like checking
as
out.
I live." They're just like talking like the Scat Band.
Yeah.
they close their eyes. Some grand final statement. You lay back on the pillow and you don't die. You open your eyes, everybody's still just looking at you like, "Oh, shit." Ah.
The secret of Big Mac sauce. All right.
Despite efforts to revive him, Garfield never awoke, and he was pronounced dead at about 2:30 p.m. or 10:30 p.m.
Course he never awoke. As soon as he fucking died, fucking Swaim ran away. He didn't do anything.
Learning from a reporter of Garfield's death the following day, Chester A. Arthur took the presidential oath of office administered by New York Supreme Court Justice John R. Brady. According to some historians...
Did he take the oath of office over the casket of James A. Garfield? Because if not, he will never be as gangster as old Lyndon Baines.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, LBJ killed JFK, so...
What?
That's one of the conspiracy theories.
I know.
According to some historians and medical experts, Garfield might have survived his wounds had the doctors attending him had at their disposal today's medical research, knowledge, techniques, and equipment. Well,
thanks.
Standard medical practice at the time dictated that priority be given to locating the path of the bullet. Several of his doctors inserted their unsterilized fingers into the wound to probe for the bullet, a common practice in the 1880s. Historians agree that massive infection was a significant factor in his death. A biographer, Peskin, said medical malpractice did not contribute to Garfield's death. The inevitable infection and blood poisoning that would ensue from a bullet wound resulted in damage to multiple organs and spinal fragmentation.
I'll tell you what, it sounds like he was fine for at least a little while, which means that it didn't really clap any major organs, right? It's literally just infection that killed him. Because, I mean, if you're alive for at least a month, you're not bleeding internally. Like, your organs are, generally speaking, have to be at least functioning. For a month, you'd be dead.
Well, it's also an age before penicillin, so it's not like they had antibiotics. So, right. The bullet wound was probably infected to begin with.
Yeah.
Rutko, a professor of surgery at the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey, has argued that starvation also played a role. He suggests that, quote-unquote, Garfield had such a non-lethal wound in today's world, he would have gone home in a matter of 2 or 3 days. The conventional narrative regarding his post-shooting medical condition was challenged by Theodore Pappas, and Shahrzad Yoharifard in a 2013 article in the American Journal of Surgery. They argue that Garfield died from a late rupture of a splenic artery, pseudoneurism, which developed, or pseudoaneurysm, which developed secondary to the path of the bullet adjacent to the splenic artery. They also argued that a sepsis was actually caused by post-traumatic acute acococcus
cholecystitis? Is it cholecystitis?
Cholecystitis, yeah.
Based on the his gallbladder was inflamed.
Based on the autopsy report, the authors speculate that his gallbladder subsequently ruptured, leading to the development
of a large bile containing abscess adjacent to the gallbladder. Why didn't they just do a HEDIS
scan? Abscess adjusted to the gallbladder.
Yeah, that'll fuck you up if your gallbladder ruptures. That's
just they should have just did a normal thing like a HEDIS scan. We would have known.
Oh my god.
You ever had
Garfield ever had a get an MRI
for a HEDIS scan before? I've had two.
It's a HEDIS scan.
It's
yeah,
fucking no. Weird as shit, dude. Especially when they pop that iodine through, you're like, oh fuck. And they give you some shit that causes your gallbladder to clench up. It's like, oh shit, now I'm gonna die.
I think I'm dying.
Oh, it stopped. Okay.
Pappas and Jarafart say this caused the septic declining.
What was
J O H A R I F A R D?
Oh, jar of fart. Okay. It's like you said jar of farts over here, you know? Guy's been eating beans all day. He's a real jar of farts.
But they say this caused the septic decline in Garfield's condition that was visible starting from July 23rd, 1881. Pappas and Joharifard also state that they don't believe that Garfield's doctors could have saved him even if they had been aware of his cholecystitis. Since the first successful cholecystectomy, which is surgical removal of a gallbladder, was performed a year after Garfield's death.
That's the first successful one, which means
yeah, the first successful one.
Your success rate still at that point is still in the dog is still just right in the toilet. So even if they could have taken it out, nah, your chances still aren't that good there, playo. Today, you get your gallbladder taken out today, you're out of the hospital the next morning. Bye, have a nice day. If they even keep you overnight, because sometimes they just do it laparoscopically.
Gateau was indicted on October 14th, 1881 for the murder of the president. During his trial, Gateau declared that he was not responsible for Garfield's death, admitting to the shooting, but not the killing.
Correct. The killing was done by the state of New Jersey.
In his defense, he wrote, General Garfield died from malpractice. According to his own physicians, he was not fatally shot. The doctors who mistreated him ought to bear the odium of his death and not his assailant. They ought to be indicted for murdering James A. Garfield and not me.
I mean, if you try that line of argument in 2025, you might get away with that. You know what I'm saying? If you got doctors on record being like, yeah, that was a non-fatal injury, but the dude dies, and you come to find out that he died of like sepsis and like post fucking with that wound.
That well, you know, Maryland, off. You know, Maryland is a standard ground state. So, you know, he felt threatened by Garfield. So that's why he shot him.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, New Jersey felt threatened by Garfield, too, because they killed him.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is he was alive when he went there. Okay. He was alive when he got there.
After a chaotic trial in which Gateau often interrupted and argued, in which his counsel used the insanity defense, the jury found him guilty on January 25th, 1882, and he was sentenced to death by hanging.
Oof.
It's believed that Gateau might have had syphilis, a disease that causes psychological mental impairment, but regardless of that, he was executed on June 30th, 1882.
I love that. guy might have had some, might have been mentally handicapped, but fuck it. Sorry, dumb dumb, you're gonna hang. Like, fucking, this country's amazing. There's no way that back we could know the- about, like, neurosyphilis and shit like that back then, but, like, holy shit, this country was wide open with our fuck shit back then.
Back when all of America was Texas.
Oh, fuck.
That's Garfield's
crazy.
Garfield's funeral train left Long Branch on the same special track that it brought him there, traveling over tracks blanketed with flowers and past houses adorned with flags.
There's probably a Billy Joel song about that specific set of train tracks.
And Garfield's body rolled the tracks. That's more of a Springsteen song.
That Billy, you know, Billy Joel wrote. That Billy Joel wrote on a notepad on his steering wheel as he was just like slamming into barricades on the highway.
I think this would be perfect if it was a bossa nova, you know?
Speaking of barricades, those are called Jersey barriers, so one more tick in the column for Jersey.
Oh my god. It's either sadness or euphoria. Boom, boom, boom.
His body was transported to the Capitol and then continued on to Cleveland for burial. Shocked by his death, Marine band leader John Philip Sousa composed the March in Memoriam, which was played when Garfield's body was received in Washington, D.C.
Sousa.
Yeah, the one and only. More than 70,000 citizens... some waiting over 3 hours passed by Garfield's coffin as his body lay in state from September 21st to 23rd, 1881, at the United States Capitol Rotunda. And on September 25th, in Cleveland, Garfield's casket was paraded down Euclid Avenue from Wilson Avenue to Public Square, with those in attendance including former Presidents Grant and Hayes and Generals William Sherman, Sheridan, and Hancock. More than 150,000, a number equal to the city's population, likewise paid their respects, and Sousa's march was played again. Garfield's body was temporarily interred in the Schofield family vault in Cleveland's Lakeview Cemetery until his permanent memorial was built. Memorials to Garfield were erected across the country. On April 10th of 1882, 7 months after Garfield's death, the U.S. Post Office Department issued a postage stamp in his honor. In 1884, sculptor Frank Happersberger completed a monument on the grounds of the San Francisco Conservatory of Flowers. In 1887, James A. Garfield Monument was dedicated in Washington. Another monument in Philadelphia's Fairmount Park was erected in 1896. In Victoria, Australia, Cannibal Creek was renamed Garfield in his honor.
I'm sorry, what? Sorry, what? What?
Well, you know, we also like to eat people, so.
Is it a, like the river? Is it a river? Or, I'm sorry, a
creek? The river.
Well, first off, it's a creek, or crick, as crick. They call it.
Yeah, it's a crick. Right. It's in Jersey, so in Northeast, it's a crick.
It's a creek? It's a creek called Cannibal Creek?
Creek, yep. Cannibal Creek.
Yeah, they got that James A. Garfield buried down there at Cannibal Creek.
Good God.
Look, you guys is going down to the Garfields, all right? You just got to randomly talk Ian's to going down accent, to the. And you got
to
add it.
Ian's going down to the Garfields.
For no reason. Yeah, you got to pluralize words for no reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, Garfields.
He's just going down there.
He's going down to the Garfields. You know, Aaron Rodgers is.
You gotta
he's
go over
winning,
there,
so they're going to go out there and celebrate.
There's 16 parking spots for the whole fucking bar. I'm not going to Cal Hill. All right. McFadden's.
On May 19th, 1890, Garfield's body was permanently interred with great solemnity and fanfare in a mausoleum in Lakeview Cemetery. Attending the dedication cemeteries were former President Hayes, President Benjamin Harrison, and future President William McKinley. Treasury Secretary William Windom also attended. Harrison said Garfield was always a quote-unquote student and instructor, and that his life, works, and death would, quote-unquote, continue to be instructive and inspiring incidents in American history. Three panels on the monument display Garfield as a teacher, Union Major General, and orator. Another shows him taking the presidential oath, and a fifth shows his body laying in state at the Capitol Rotunda in Washington, D.C. Garfield's murder by a deranged office seeker awakened public awareness of the need of civil reform legislation. Senator George H. Pendleton, a Democrat from Ohio, launched a reform effort that resulted in the Pendleton Act in January of 1883. The act reversed the what was known then as the spoil system, where office seekers paid paid up or gave political service to obtain or keep federally appointed positions. Under this act, appointments were awarded on merit and competitive examination. To ensure the reform was implemented, Congress and Arthur established and funded the Civil Service Commission. The Pendleton Act, however, covered only 10% of federal government workers. For Arthur, previously known for having been a veteran spoilsman, as someone who you know, benefited from the system, civil service reform became his most noteworthy achievement. A marble statue of Garfield by Charles Niehaus was added to the National Statuary Hall collection in the Capitol in Washington, D.C., a gift from the state of Ohio in 1886. Garfield is honored with a life-size bronze sculpture inside the Cuyahoga County Soldiers and Sailors Monument in Cleveland, Ohio.
That's Cuyahoga, my friend. You better say that one right there, buddy. You are in America. You better pronounce these counties correct. It's Cuyahoga, friend.
Look, my grandpa didn't kill that entire Indian tribe for you to fuck their name up.
I didn't know. I didn't know I landed in the dog pound.
How they gonna?
I didn't
know
I landed in the dog pound here.
We didn't give 5,000 people smallpox for you to fuck that name up, boy.
You know how many blankets your mom had to knit? Me mom was knitting blankets the whole yip long day. Ding dong dang.
Knuckles so big with arthritis you couldn't believe it, son. You couldn't play golf with them things.
Her arthritis was so
I better wrap this up as the Lonnies have come for me, so I better wrap this up. On March 2nd, 2019, the National Park Service erected exhibit panels in Washington to mark the site of his assassination.
Right, he got, fucked. He got on shot the right here. Like a fucking idiot, he got shot right here. Can you believe that shit?
Pussy.
He's walking down the road and he just like lets a bullet hit him, you know?
If somebody right tried here. To shoot me, I would grab that gun out of his hand like Jackie Chan, spin it around, shoot him.
Exactly. You got to at least do the backup, backflip defense, you know?
Oh. But that, boys, is a tale of one James A. Garfield.
Fucking lasagna eating cat motherfucker.
Monday hating son of a bitch.
How dare they make
Normal killed him.
It's probably Normal, yeah. You're right.
Motherfucking Normal.
Oh my god. Alright, well, I'm gonna go do things. Alright. Fuck you, James. I mean, I'm sorry. Rest in peace.
I wasn't paying attention. I don't know which, but whatever.
Yeah. No, I couldn't hear anything you guys were saying, really, because it's so garbled, but I tried.
Anyway. Recording's your way. Coming your way, then.
All right. Later.
Night. Good luck.